The VC Show. You already know about the Low Post podcast with Zach Lowe and the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. But have you listened to The VC Show with 8-time NBA All-Star Vince Carter and co-host Roz Golden-Wude, who talk all things basketball with some of the biggest names in sports entertainment? They will give their unfiltered thoughts on the NBA, and Vince will share stories from his illustrious 22-year career. That's The VC Show. Listen while you're listening to this podcast. You were actually drafted by the Sixers, right?
Yeah.
Drafted by the Sixers and traded to the Suns. For a moment there, you thought you were going to Philly. What were the emotions like when you thought you were going to Philly?
Oh, they were crazy. I was about to tear up just because how crazy it was. I'm like, I'm really about to be home. My mom works for the Sixers. I'm like, I've been talking about this all year. Like, that was the biggest thing all my senior year of college was like, Philly got the 10th pick. They'll be dumb if they don't get Mikal, hometown kid. They need a 3-and-D guy. Like, it was set up. Like, it was just set up for me to go.
Welcome to the CJ McCollum Show. I'm being joined, as always, by Izzy Gutierrez. We have a very special guest who hails from Philly. He goes by the name of Mikal Bridges. First and foremost, how you doing, Mikal?
I'm good, man. How you doing, CJ?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you joining the podcast. Normally, I read off all the statistics of the podcast guest, so I'll do that first, and then we'll get into the questions. But NBA All-Defensive First Team in 2022, two-time NCAA champion 2016, 2018, third-team All-American, AP, Sports Nation, NABC, all of those things. Big East Co-Defensive Player of the Year, Big East Tournament MVP, Julius Erving Award in 2018, first-team All-Big East 2018. You were selected with the 10th overall pick in the 18th draft by the Phoenix Suns, and you played in the 2020 finals. Your nickname is the Warden, according to Google search.
Can I ask you a question about that, Mikal? And thanks for joining us here. So two quick things. I've been one to tell people that they I've either pronouncing their name wrong or I've spelled their name wrong. So I'm curious, growing up with your name, like what was pronounced and what do you? What is the proper pronunciation? Like, did people just try to say Michael all the time?
Yeah, no, there's a lot. Like, I've heard so many different names. Like substitute teachers was, like, the worst. Like, you know, like, I'm Bridges. So it's pronounced Mikal. Like, the I's, like, kind of like an A, so it's, like, Mikal. But substitute teacher Bridges is, you know, if you're in homeroom and stuff, you know, if you've been there for a while, you know, like, you're after this person and stuff. So I see, like, the teacher, like, reading names, and I'm probably, like, the third or fourth person, and, like, they just stare at the paper and, like, just keep staring. And sometimes I just raise my hand. I just be like, Mikal, like, I mean, don't even waste your time. I hear, like, Mikael. just, like, Michael was heavy. Michael was the biggest the whole time, but people used to struggle so bad. It was pronounced Mikal.
I heard so many versions of Israel Gutierrez, I can't even tell you. But as the protector of all the things Miami, the warden, it was a gentleman by the name of Joel Anthony down here in Miami. He had another nickname. I think it was like Frying Pan Hands. But the warden was Joel Anthony's nickname down here. And I'm just wondering who gave you that. And did anybody say, hey, that guy down in Miami who played a few years back might already have that nickname?
It really came from the Suns fan base. I think it's just because of my defense, and they always be like Mikal Jail. I think it was kind of big during, like, right before the bubble and going into the bubble. So they was heavy on the Mikal Jail and all these memes and stuff. So they just call me the Warden. Obviously, like, I was just like if I had to pick a nickname, I think I would have called myself the Warden. But, you know, I let the fans pick that. And it's just, if they like it, it's cool. It's hilarious, though. It's all right, though.
All right. On behalf of Joel Anthony, we'll allow it.
So. Yeah, I guess West Coast.
I left out one very important statistic that's been controversial throughout the NBA for quite some time now. You have the record for active players for most consecutive games played and having not missed a game in your entire career, probably dating back to high school, I imagine. You probably haven't missed a game.
Yeah, to junior high school.
And you're on pace to play 83 games this year, which ironically would be the amount of games two teams have to play next year if they win the in-season tournament championship. So I think my first question is, how have you been able to play every game throughout your career? Is it the rehab process that you go through? Is it the sleep? Is it the water? Is it not practicing as much? Like what's the key to your success?
Man, I don't know. I think I just been blessed just with no crazy injuries. That's like to start off. But other than that, I think just recovery, just take care of my body. I think I'm big on that. Just like even like today, like an off day, I could easily just, you know, sit around and just chill. But like just going in and get like hour and a half treatment or something is just like, you know, it's our job. Like, why not go get treatment and help yourself and be better for yourself? So that plays a big part. And then just how my body is, it's just, it recovers faster than normal. Or just, you know, everybody's body's a little different. Like I could roll the hell out my ankle and be like swole up a little bit. And then like the next day, like if I ice it all night, like it'll just go down fast. And most people, you know, most people, no matter what they do, like even they ice it, they wake up next morning and it might've got even fatter. So
right,
it's my body's just, it's just weird. And I guess it just kind of gets through injuries faster than normal.
You say it casually, but it sounds like you're a superhero. When you say that, what's the worst injury that you've had that you've just kind of like shrugged off and played through?
I think the toughest one, I didn't even tell Sam or anybody about it, CJ. I mean, until later. But it was my rookie year, and I grade 2 sprained my right elbow, so my shooting arm, and literally, I couldn't, like, if the rim was right in front of me, like, I couldn't do this. Like, I couldn't do none of this because it's just all right here. It's on my shooting arm.
So couldn't I remember, do your shooting motion for those of the podcast. Yeah,
like, and the rim is right here. Like, it's not like I'm shooting threes or free throws. Like, I'm right here, like, right under the rim. I'm like, bro, I can barely get the ball right here. So I went back. It was in Sacramento, actually, at the time. I remember I went back in a training office, and I was like, listen, like, I need to get taped up. So he taped me up from, like, my forearm to all the way up here. And it was like a robo arm. Like, I could barely bend my arm. So I just put an arm sleeve over it. And I was just playing in a game with it. I was like, listen, and at that time, Book was shooting 40 shots, and we were losing. So, like, I had a lot of games where I shot the ball maybe, like, 3 times. But, like, actually, that game, I actually shot the ball, like, a good amount. I think adrenaline just kind of was – I was just playing. I just kind of try to forget about it.
So nobody noticed. I was
really out there for defense. I was out there for defense. And just if I got some looks, I just pray that just the ball will go in.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you are into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I don't recommend people playing through those types of injuries, but you know, the competitive spirit always kicks in. I've had some games where I've played and or either delayed surgery or just played and wasn't able to shoot threes or wasn't able to do certain stuff. But the guy guarding you doesn't really know until you start turning down shots and they're looking like, why isn't he shooting this? It's like, I really just can't. Like,
and then they start giving you the Caitlin Clark. It's like, he's not shooting.
it's just pretty funny. We discussed you being drafted to the Phoenix Suns. I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, talk about your time in Phoenix. Obviously, you developed, you got known for obviously playing defense at a high level. You continued to hone in on your offensive game, starting with the midi, then the corner threes, then adding the pick and roll, adding the one dribble, two dribble pull up. What type of impact did Monty and the Phoenix Suns have on your, you know, career development while you were there? And what's one of the things you miss most about playing with the Phoenix Suns before we get into Brooklyn?
Yeah, man, Monty and all the coaching staff, they just, they're big time. They helped me where I'm at right now. And I mean, CJ, you know, just a little progression, like you just said, like to the corner threes and then to just getting to the mid range, just like little parts I keep adding. And that's basically just off my coaches is giving me confidence. You know, like obviously you have C and Book who shoot a lot of middies. So you think like a guy like me who do corner threes, you know, the world isn't satisfied with mid-range shots, you know what I'm saying? And for Monty to give me the confidence to go out there and just get to that spot. And once he knows I was starting making them a little bit, he was just letting me be free. It's just like he wanted me to be aggressive and wanted me to get to things I like. So it started with getting to the mid-range. And then after that, it's just continue to grow. And, you know, we got to the playoffs. You know how people guard C and Book. So it was just like, we need another score, we need another person that can handle it. So that was like my biggest thing going to the offseason each year, is to get prepared for that. And really this year, you know, obviously I got traded and stuff. We didn't get to it yet, but like I didn't think I was going to get traded. So all my stuff I was working on was getting ready for the playoffs. So when Book and C do get trapped, like I'll be that next option and it'll just make us tougher to guard. So just a lot of work. They helped me so much and gave me so much confidence. And the biggest thing I miss about Phoenix is just my teammates and being out there on a court and knowing what everybody's going to be at and what they're going to do. Like, you know, you got synergy and you're so close to everybody. You've been playing so many years with people. Like you know what they're going to do. Like, I know if I drive and if T. Craig or Josh Okogie's in that corner, I know what they're going to do. Like, if I drive and Book's right there, or even defensively too, like, we step up for each other just strictly off synergy of being together. So that's the thing I miss the most about being with them on the court is just the synergy. And, like, it's just second nature. Like, you know when a guy is going to step up and you're going to help him rotate. Like, D.A., like, I know if I come off a ball screen and a big switches on me, I don't have to think. I just know that he's probably already sealing his man at the rim. And he knows I'm going to throw it. So I'll just like turn around, just chuck the ball up in the air. He's going to get it and lay the ball up.
You guys were the midi committee out in Phoenix. And for those who don't really have the time in their lives to read an entire Zach Lowe column, he wrote 10 things that he likes. And Mikal Bridges' game is one of those. And he sort of breaks it down a little bit with a little bit of detail there. You probably haven't even seen that yet, have you? Because that was this morning that I think that it came out. I watched you drop 45 on the Heat, and I think Max Strus still has nightmares about you. When you talk about going from that second, you know, creator to that sort of primary guy in your role now at times with the Nets, you and Spencer, I guess, how easy of a transition was that? And when you, like, started doing it, like, was the month of March was 28.8 points. Like, when you're doing this on a regular basis, do you even sort of reassess what you can do, what you can be as an NBA player for the rest of your career?
Yeah. For your first question, like, what I always tell people is that I got traded at the right time. We had literally everybody out in Phoenix with – C was out for a while. Book was out. Cam Johnson, Cam Payne. We didn't have Jay Crowder. So, like, we had a lot of people out. And it was just, like, I had to be that. I had to step up, you know? And that was the biggest thing with my coaches and everybody. Like, I had to be that guy, step up. And in the beginning, it was tough. I had a lot of tough games. And, like, being, like, no one option, also trying to do everything on defense as well. Like, I start to realize why, like, the top guys, like, when he used to guard me and I'm being that, you know, I got all the energy in the world from, because I'm just sitting in the corner offense and I see why I get my cuts and stuff, because it's tough. Like, I'm being in that situation now, guarding top guy or guarding off ball, like, you sometimes get that little breather. And then the other guys that's been sitting in the corner has been sitting there the whole game and they just ready to cut. And I've been back cut a lot of, like, multiple times, and it's been pissing me off low key. But I've been, that was a big struggle in the beginning, just doing it the whole game on both ends. And then as time went on, I got better, got a little bit more efficient, was winning some games, you know, being that guy. So it helped me a lot. To now I'm in a situation in Brooklyn where, like, okay, I just had a month having everything on my plate. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just had a whole month doing that. So, like, now, like, we got more pieces and we got a really, we got a pretty good team. So now it's just like, okay, now I could do this, but now I got maybe like better spacing, or like, you know, got a lot of guys out there. So, Phoenix definitely, like, that time I had in Phoenix where everybody was out definitely built me for this moment. And being out there scoring now, I tell people this all the time, like, I'm not trying to just get 30. Like, I'm trying to really win. And I feel like the biggest chance of us winning is if I'm making shots. You know what I'm saying? Like, if, and as you go to numbers, like, if I miss every shot I take, there's a high chance of us losing the game. So it's like every time I shoot, I'm shooting obviously to score, but like I'm looking at the scoreboard like we gotta win this damn game. So if it's like if we're down, like to bring us back, or if we're up to like push the lead, or like bat, like throughout the whole game, I'm just trying to win the game. So then as you look up, and like I take pride in my work and I take pride in being efficient. So like if you look up, like shoot, I might have 20 something and it's like the third. It's just because like I'm trying to make every shot I take, and I usually take shots that I work on and I'm confident in it. So I just work on my game, and then I look up, I might have 30 and we win or something like that. So it's different for me. I didn't grow up, I've not been a 30 point guy that just score a lot. Like I've always been a guy that's just like around 25, 26, 24. Like I just could never break 30. And now it's like, I feel like if I don't get 30 or something, it's like, I'm like letting us down or something.
That's a good feeling to have. And I think you talked about the development. You talked about timing. I tell people all the time and players that things happen for a reason. You just got to be ready when they do. And you were ready. You had got an opportunity to obviously play extended minutes. We played you guys as a whole, and we played you guys with some guys out. And obviously you've been able to transform your game and become more aggressive. You talked about the efficiency. You talked about the midi, having to have more primary ball handling responsibilities, more pick and roll, more sets in front of the defense as opposed to behind the defense, which gives you different looks. But then I think the touches matters. And I think people don't understand when you touch the ball throughout the entire game, your rhythm becomes better. When people kind of expect you to score, when you get the license to shoot bad shots, that's when you see your efficiency generally go up sometimes because of the confidence. And I think you've done that in Phoenix with your expanded role. I mean, you averaged 17 on the season, the entire season. But if you look at your body of work when guys are out, you were at, you know, probably that 22 to 25 range that you talked about when guys were hurt. Now in Brooklyn, 23 games into the trade, 35 minutes a night, 27 points per game, basically 50, 40, 90. You're at like 49 and some change, 41 and 90 on high value. And that kind of shows the growth. Is this what you thought it would be like in Brooklyn? And secondly, Sam wanted me to call you Brooklyn Bridges.
honestly, to be honest with you, I don't think like this. I bet you if you ask like people on our staff in on Phoenix when I left, they probably like who I work with, like Jerry Jack and all my assistant coaches and Corey Benson, like people I work with, I bet you like they're supposed to be like, oh yeah, I saw this coming easily. Like, you know, we work with them all the time. Like I see it. But I didn't think all this, honestly, like obviously I thought I was going to obviously like be scoring 20 a game and more, just all that. But just what I'm on right now and how I'm playing, like it's definitely something I sometimes just look back and just be like, all right, like, you know, be appreciative of this and like, you know, don't take it for granted. So I definitely didn't see all this coming for sure.
There was a clip of somebody asking you who your favorite player was. This was after the trade. And you kind of come to that realization. It was just like, man, it was Kevin Durant. And I might have sent you, if you probably check your Twitter messages, people you might know, I might have sent you a message saying, I was like, man, I thought just that clip alone, just there's sort of like so much authenticity there. And it just feels like you're always yourself, regardless of the situation. And, you know, when you throw all this in, the growth, right, of your and just recognizing what's there for you potentially, like it's almost feel like a really cool feeling. But I'm just wondering, like, that part of it, like just coming to the realization of just how weird a world that this is, that you got traded for your favorite player, I guess, growing up, if you will. Have you been able to like think about that even more, sort of wrap your mind around that and just be like, kind of, wow, the world's kind of a crazy place.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like that's, I think, and that's why it's so just, like, obviously you're going to feel some way getting traded. That's just always how it is, no matter who it's for. But like, you start to realize, like, okay, who you get traded for, like, shit, I got traded for KD, so, like, I understand, like, even, like, I'll be real, like, the new owner came in that situation, like, I understand why that happens, like, do I personally think Phoenix would have been okay with me and Cam still there? 100%, but to get a guy like KD, who is one of the best scorers ever, like, how can you not do that? And it's not like he's 38 or 39. Like, he's still Kevin Durant getting 30 a game on 50, 40, 90. And it's insane to watch and insane to see. And it's just wild, like, just to look back on it. And just, I think when years go on and when I'm done playing, it's going to be something that's just like, you know, if I had kids one day, talk about, like, yeah, like, I really got traded for one of my favorite players ever, like, when I was 26 years old. Like, it was crazy. But it's wild, and it's just so funny because being in Brooklyn and KD being here, and me scoring at a high clip, and everybody's just like, "Oh, like we didn't lose KD, this and that," and I'm just like, "Pump your brakes!" I'm like, "I'm the hell down. I appreciate the love, but there's only like one goddamn KD in this world. I'll tell you that. It's that 7 foot over there in Phoenix."
You guys are currently 6 in the Eastern Conference. You're, call it, 3.5 games out of 5th on the Nets. Two games up on Miami. 2 games up in the lost column as well. As you get closer and closer to the season ending, has it set in yet that you're going to be playing in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference? Flights are going to be a lot easier in the playoffs. You won't have to fly from Phoenix to New Orleans. You'll be going from 1-8-2-7-3-6. You'll be a train ride away from Philly if it ended right now. Or you could probably drive. You could probably drive home in between games if you wanted to.
It's definitely kicking in. I think I'm so locked in right now. I'm just not trying to be in that play-in. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody wants to be in that play-in. You want to get that solidified spot. And, it's definitely kicking in. I think the biggest thing is just thinking about, like, getting to the playoffs, and this, I know how the schemes are. Like, I just played against you, and I know what the scout was, like, on you and BI.
What was the scout?
Just know you had a lot of tension. There's a lot of tension. So that's, like, a thing I think in back of my head where, like, but I was the defensive guy, so, like, I know how I prepared to guard the best guy every night, especially in the playoffs. So that's something in my back head, just knowing, like, scouts are going to be just a little bit more super detailed, and things that I probably like to get to, it's going to be a heavy emphasis on. And so just being prepared to, you know, play my game, but also know that there's going to be a little bit more tighter of a, like, of a scout on me. So that's what I think about. But yes, everything's around the corner. Like you said, Philly right there, Boston right there, Milwaukee's still right there. Like, just easy flights, easy drive. Yeah, that damn.
Is there still much of a difference of feel, of type of game between the Western and Eastern Conference since you've been in both this season?
I mean, yeah, you see when CP sent me a helmet?
That's right. East.
Yeah, it's a little more downhill out here in the East, and that's just been known if you've been in the league. And, you know, West Coast, where it's so, like, Golden State, like, go 5 out, you know, you go small. But in the East, where they remember they had a lineup when it was Jared Allen and Mobley, and then Markkanen at the 3, like, you had 3 7-footers out there. in the West, it was it's like your five is going to be freaking 6'8" at times. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely different. But I mean, I like it. I think the defensive scheme is a little bit different over here, and offensively, I kind of like it as well, just how they play, because sometimes they like the red and have bigs up on a guard, and I'm just like, all right, like, that's kind of, that's I like that. They have a big guy guard me, and up top is fine. So their scheme is a little different, and I think I like it a little bit more than the West, for sure.
So you're a Philly guy, probably. Do you, I'm sorry, go ahead, CJ.
No, I was just going to take it back to draft night. You were actually drafted by the Sixers, right?
Yeah, yep.
Drafted by the Sixers and traded to the Suns. For a moment there, you thought you were going to Philly. What were the emotions like when you thought you were going to Philly?
Oh, they were crazy. I was about to tear up just because how crazy it was. I'm like, I'm really about to be home. My mom works for the Sixers. I'm like, I've been talking about this all year. Like, that was the biggest thing all my senior year of college was like, Philly got the 10th pick. They'll be dumb if they don't get Mikal, hometown kid. They need a 3-and-D guy. Like, it was set up. Like, it was just set up for me to go home. And, like, the emotions was nuts. I remember being in the media room, and I have my Sixers hat on, and I'm sitting down, and everybody in the Philly media is sitting down. And I kid you not, like, I know every person there, like, since high school, college. Like, I'm sitting there, and people are raising their hand, and I'm, like, pointing at them, like, big geek, big smiles, like, my guy, like, what up? Good to see you. You know what I'm saying? And I walk out of there, and they told me the news, and I was literally pissed off, like, actually pissed off. And it took me days after to, like, be appreciative of the moment. But listen, Kel, like all that, like, you went top 10, like, you got drafted. Like, I know you're in a moment. It's human nature to, like, be upset about not going to a place you wanted to go. And it took me days to realize that, but I was pissed off that night. I didn't go out. I stayed in my hotel room. I was that mad. And for what? Like, what am I pissed off about? Like, I went top 10 in a freaking dream. So that took me days to like really get over that. But it was wild. It was really wild.
Do you have any, and I asked this of, I think it forget was who it was, maybe it was Grant Williams, but any closer connection to college basketball since you had so much success when you were there? Like, do you still dig in and pay that much close attention to college basketball?
No, like, you hear what my boy Darren Fox said, like, I can't, like, I really just can't. Like, the tournament's cool because it's like, it's a tournament. It's the whole idea. So no matter how good the players are, whatever, the tournament's always going to be fun. But like regular season, oh my God, I can't watch it. Like, I really can't. Like, UConn is in the championship, and I was just at the Villanova UConn game at home, and I went to the game at Wells Fargo, and like, it's like, I like the kid Hawkins. He's nice. But, like, the game was stinky. Like, I'm sitting there like, this game is ass. Like, I'm literally sitting there like, what? And now UConn's a championship. I'm just like, okay, like, I know these years. I'm not going to say my years, but any year in college, like, you know, if you see a team that's going about to win a national championship, like, you go to that game, you're watching, like, oh, these motherfuckers are nice. Right. No, not one time I sat there was like, yo, this team is cold. Like, hell no. Like, that is ass. Like, that is, I don't know.
I'm kind of glad I didn't watch Jordan Hawkins too much early in the season, because watching him now, he looks legit. But I'm with you. Like, I watch college basketball, especially during the regular season. And it's just like, man. And it's almost like in the tournament, you can tell the teams that have just sort of turned it up a little bit and they just look a little bit better. But it's different than when I mean, I wasn't in school, but like 2006 and 7, like, I watched that Gators team at the first two rounds and I was like, man, they're the best team here. And they got at least two pros on that team. I don't see that as much anymore. Maybe, I mean, UConn with Sonogo and Hawkins, but it takes a while. It feels like.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Like, as you see, there's no number one seeds that made it to, I don't know what it was, freaking Elite Eight, Final Four, whatever. That's not happening. Like, that's not happening other years because those teams are nice and dominant. But hey, it's great for college, you know, this balance where there's no one seeds and all these other teams are making it. So it's great for college basketball, I guess. But now,
speaking of balance for the women's side, then you guys see the Angel Reese celebration. What do you guys think about that?
That tournament is better than the men's for sure. The women's
agreed.
Like so. I'm out. Like that's for sure. Like I'm sick. I missed LSU Iowa game. I had a game. I'm sick that I missed it. Like
I watched the entire game.
You watched the entire game?
I watched Sue and Diana's show. And I was going back and forth because they're hilarious. And, you know, they got their little drinks in. They get interviewing guys. CP came on right before y'all game, right before the Suns and OKC game. He came on and they was asking about Katie getting hurt in warm-ups. Like they just wild and like funny. And they're breaking down the game. But just to see the pace, like the pace of Iowa and LSU, the intensity they play with, like it was just a fun game to watch. And obviously, Caitlin is just shooting from deep out. You know, Reese is playing with that flair, that swag, that confidence. They got a bunch of girls that can go. They got a girl coming off the bench, goes 5 for 5 in the first half, and she ain't scored in two games. Like, it's just a really cool night. And then you got, you know, LSU coach just swagged out on the sideline. She dressed like it's Mardi Gras with the country accent. So it was just really cool to see the competitive nature, but also, like, to see the world support women's basketball. Like, so many people watch that game. The price of tickets, you know, was through the roof. Game sold out. And it's just like what we need in society is the support, you know, women's sports as well. And to be able to see so many athletes competing at a high level and really showing that flair and that swagger that you want to see in sports, I think it was really cool to see.
So then I know this is until Thursday that this comes out, but and so people will be talking about it since then. But let's discuss that from your guys' perspective, because like I feel like, you know, double standard in terms of how we talk about the men's game versus the women's game. But when like, all right, so in the men's game or in the NBA, we see people most recently Russell Westbrook get guarded, you know, 10 feet off by Draymond Green. When Caitlin Clark does that to a South Carolina player, but adds the wave off that, don't worry about her. Is that too much? Is that OK? Like, what do you guys think about that?
Too much what?
I don't know. Like, I think it's perfect. I would have added a hell no.
Exactly. So then when Angel, then Reese sort of sits on that for a while and just like after the national championship came, comes back and gives her that. Was that like, you think, warranted, or was that just like, you know, again, too much?
No, too much for what? Too much for what?
I'm asking because that seems to be the conversation, right? Like after you win a championship to go back and give her that. And I'm just like, well, even if that's not like your genuine feeling, like, oh, I'm this jerk and I'm just going to go talk smack. Like, I think it helps. Like, I think it helps just create a conversation. Like, you know, why not? Like, go. She's been a superstar and Caitlin Clark's been dominating the headlines. But Reese is out there, too. So, you know, go ahead and give me some love, even if I have to, you know, give her back what she gave to somebody else.
For sure. That's just that competitive nature they got. Like, you know, it ain't no hate between that. They're fired up. And, you know, they both talk smack, you know, Caitlin's doing it, you know, in Louisville and all that. Like she talked, and that's what it is. Like that competitive spirit, like, you're going to talk trash about games and that's just going to boost you and all that stuff. And that's what she did. And she was fired up. They won, you know, like you're saying, like, think about it as like those girls, like Caitlin Clark is everywhere. Like she's been going ballistic. So, like, you know, the world's talking about it and they're young, so they know they're seeing it and they're like, okay, they want this girl to win it. They win it all. Like, watch what we do. So they win it and then they talking that cash. I love every second of it.
Yeah. If somebody beats Steph Curry, CJ, you're going to give him one of these in the finals or in the conference finals, aren't you?
Nah, because you got to win a championship first. So I think it's different. You do that and then lose to the Celtics. It's like all for naught, you know what I'm saying? So I think people that have never won, telling a woman how to win is just crazy. Like, you never won. How are you going to tell her how to celebrate, right? You don't know what she's been through. You don't know what trials and tribulations she's gone through, the injuries, the setbacks, the self-doubt, transfer, everything that went into her getting to that moment. So you can't tell her how to enjoy it. And I think when you win, you have a right to celebrate however you see fit. You have a right to do whatever you want within reason once you win. Now, if you lose, then it is what it is. Like, you move on. And I think Caitlin Clark didn't really comment on it because she knows that she plays with a certain type of flair to where you got to be willing to take, you know, what comes with that, like what comes mm-hmm. with greatness, right? Like the way she celebrates and everything like that, people talked about it and they celebrated her. They celebrated her low-key taunting people and all that stuff. And to have it happen back, I think she just thought to herself, like, I can't wait to see these girls again. Probably was what she's thinking, sure. Like, wait till next season when we run it back, like, get a little bit more help. And I think that's the mentality you got to have, where when you lose, you got to lose with a sense of pride and a sense of self, but also understand that, like, you got to respect your opponent. And when you win, you should respect your opponent too. But I always think that when you win, depending on the age, I mean, it's going to be a little bit more extra, because especially if you ain't never done it before, like, I think she wins another one next year, like, it won't be as, it'll just be like, yo, that's two. Like, it won't be as much. But that first one, like, it just hits different, man. Like, you ain't never had it before. It really hits different.
For sure.
Is there anything you guys are talking about from the players' perspective that with the new CBA agreement that sort of is cool? Anything that stands out?
I was asking questions about it yesterday. CJ, like, I know you're more locked in than me on it. I was trying to figure it out. Is that like with the like the Supermax thing or something like that?
What you want to know, man?
Let's hammer it out.
I see Cleveland's getting upset because I guess like Mobley is up. No,
Cleveland should be happy.
Oh, so okay. I got it backwards. So Cleveland is happy that it can sign Mobley.
It used to be two designated, and this isn't. Before I comment on all these things, I just want to go on the record saying two things, right? Because I've been declining interviews and everything, and I don't want to speak about it until we've actually received a term sheet. So we negotiated a deal in principle, right? And it's just kind of like when you know you're going to get an extension, right? Like you mm-hmm. negotiate it in principle and good faith. You sign that we have an agreement, but the term sheet has not been received yet, which means we haven't finalized the entire agreement yet. So everything that's getting leaked is more he say, she say, partial facts, yeah. if you will. Everything still has to be formalized and presented to the players. It has to be formalized and presented to the governors for approval. So preface everything I'm saying with that. There have been a lot of leaks in the media and stuff like that, and I can confirm some things and I can deny others. But I think the moral of the story is, I'll answer your question first in regards to the designated players. So historically, and this is me paraphrasing a lot, you could have two designated max players that you draft, right, or acquire, right? So think the Sixers had Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, right? Mm-hmm. In Portland, Dame was the max, and then I got, like, what was considered close to a max. In Cleveland, Donovan Mitchell was a max player. Darius Garland signed a max. So technically, if the CBA wasn't amended, they wouldn't be able to sign Mobley to a max extension or whatever the case may mm-hmm. be. And based on what we're doing now, let me make sure I'm saying this right. Twofold. There's two things that we're looking to add. Players extending their rookie scale contracts will be able to negotiate for a longer deal, 5 years, which is, you know, going to be very important. Teams can now do extended trade transactions that are richer and longer. Veterans can now receive a first year salary in the extension with a 40% raise, twice as much as the 20% max contained in the current CBA. And there's been some significant revamps in the extension rules, such as rookies, veterans, stars, and traded players will have more flexibility if they are content to stay with their own team. So we're basically trying to reshape a lot of ways in which player empowerment is viewed upon, but also how player movement occurs. And we want to give teams more flexibility, because when you draft well, you should be rewarded for drafting well, and you shouldn't be punished for it. I think oftentimes a lot of teams have been punished for making the right decisions in the draft, where it's hard to build from within. And I think there's a lot of misconception that we're like targeting teams that are spending, not targeting teams that aren't spending. And I think systematically, a lot of that stuff just isn't true. We've added several disincentives for teams who live below the salary cap. So teams will not be able to stay under the minimum salary cap, i.e. Oklahoma City, where they had to pay out players. So we're looking at ways to collectively empower our game while creating a more stable, competitive balance, if you will. And I think that's what the NBA historically has talked about, is competitive balance. Like, they want the seasons to look like it looks right now, right? Where you got all these teams competing for a few spots. Every game matters. Everybody's playing in every game, i.e. Mikal Bridges, right? And we want to make sure that teams that do have a chance or a window, i.e. yeah. Boston Celtics, where they have a chance to maybe spend more money, make a championship caliber run, want them to be able to and not get taxed as much. So we've reduced the tax dollar for dollar. We've done it in ways in which if you want to go into the cap and spend, you can, and you won't be penalized as much for it. So I think looking at what's going to come out in days or weeks to come, we did the best that we could. This is something that we negotiated for an extremely long time. And one of the things Tamika has always talked about is growing the pie, right? Like she's really, really big on figuring out ways to grow the pie, add a player's piece to the pie, right? And then create a path toward owning a piece of the pie. And I think we've done all of those things that we've targeted, and you'll see leaks of ways in which we have a more vibrant free agency, ways in which we have benefit packages, more jobs, maximize our group licensing rights. We've added more money to the pot. We've given players a chance to potentially partake in equity through private equity funds. Like, we're doing stuff that's never been done before in the history of collective bargaining in all sports, right? So for people to frown upon that without getting all the information is baffling. At least get all the information first and then frown upon it or make your own opinions and judgments, which is completely fine. But I mean, we're bringing in an extra $160 million into BRI, right? So that's $80 million towards player shares. We're doing a lot of stuff that honestly hasn't been done before. And we're making it so that players can invest alongside owners or governors or whatever you want to call them.
It's a different version of player empowerment. It's setting yourself up, right? As opposed to just setting up which team you play for.
We talk about the importance of creating generational wealth. We talk about the importance of having business opportunities, economic opportunities, making sure our players are well equipped, well knowledged to invest properly, to educate themselves and their families. And we're doing those things while creating more player movement and freedom. It's like, well, I don't know what else you'd expect to get in a negotiation, which they're fighting for certain things that they want to have to make the game better. We're fighting for certain things we want to have to make the game better. And ultimately, there's a happy medium that you have to find. But I'll say all this to say that I'm the face of the players and the liaison, if you will, and the guy who's trying to make the game better for 450 people who have 450 different opinions, 450 different agendas. I play for the New Orleans Pelicans, right? I got guys on the executive committee who play for the Boston Celtics. Their team's in an entirely different situation than ours. And then you got owners and governors whose teams are in entirely different situations and they have their own agendas. So this is a tough job for anyone. And it's not like the CBA is made exactly how I want it to be made. It's like, this is exactly what CJ wanted, and they just do exactly what I say, and then it's over. It's like, it doesn't work like that. It's a negotiation where there's a happy medium you try to find, but ultimately both parties enjoy the negotiation aspect of it. But more so than that, we enjoy when it's over, and we're getting close to that point.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, man.
Man.
I don't know how he does that, like spends all that time doing that and still, you know, scouts the Clippers. It's crazy. That Hall of Fame class, Dwayne Wade, Dirk, Pop, Pau, like, I know I don't normally talk Hall of Fame. It's just a bunch of people telling their memories about stuff. But like this seems like absolutely loaded class. I don't know if any of it sort of resonates with you guys in particular. But, you know, me watching Dwayne Wade, who I covered since he was a rookie, it's just kind of not only makes me feel old, but kind of one of those like this is a different Hall of Fame class than any other ones. But anything about it stand out to you guys?
For me, it's D. Wade. My brother's favorite player growing up was Carmelo Anthony and D. Wade. So like they called him D. Wade with braids when he was in high school. He was number three. He dunked a lot. He was a slashing guard. So like to see, you know, a guy who, you know, has influenced me in terms of getting into the wine business and helping me and obviously signing with Li Ning, to see his dream come true and to see the work that he put in, right? Going to Marquette, being a prop 48 at Marquette, where he has to sit out a year to kind of work on his education, his grades, to going to South Beach and leading him to a title is just insane. And then winning multiple titles and what he's been able to do in the business world in terms of gaining ownership and stuff like that, it's just really cool to see. And then obviously popping the rest of the guys, it's been really cool. I think Tony Parker's going in.
Mm-hmm.
I played against TP and I guarded TP in the playoffs, which wasn't fun. They ended up winning the finals that year. But just to see his development and his impact on the game has been really fun for me. My development from 2013 draft to 2023, like seeing how the game has changed and how European players have impacted it is just really cool.
Yeah, they're all legends. They're all legends to me. I've been watching them since I was a kid. So that's just dope for them. And you know, I know their families and stuff is happy, but I mean, they're legends, man. Like watching D Wade, and then when Bron got there, like that whole show over there was ridiculous. And like Dirk, just nobody be able to guard Dirk. It's just wild. This is how he works mid post. And once he gets that three going, like you really have no chance. Because if you guard him and you're too close, like he got that little one step on you, like you're dead in the water because he's 7 feet and he's big and he's just going to finish around you or even hit like a tough bait over you. So that's just dope for them.
It's crazy going back and watching some of the clips about how people talk about Dirk, like Kobe, all these guys. They have such an admiration and it just sounded just like that. It's like, I don't know how, but it's amazing how he does it.
Can't block that. That shot all the way up here, man. Baby, yeah. You can't get to that. Nobody, you don't see nobody. You don't see nobody in front of him.
Like Caitlin Clark. I'm good here, CJ. I don't know about you.
No, I'm good, man. I was just reading through my CBA notes and I was like, you know what? I probably shouldn't say these things until it becomes public.
Well, you can't reject your own request for an interview on your own show, can you?
You want me to listen to things where you at on the way out?
I mean, yeah, you know. Okay. And then you can call audience on Wednesday night and be like, don't put that in if it's a big deal.
Okay. In regards to salary cap, teams will be forced to spend into the market, increasing options and leverage for free agents. For teams who spend up to the salary cap, we offer more opportunities with the richer and longer room exception. For teams over the salary cap, we increased our mid-level exception. We also added a new exception for second-round picks, which not only will help those players, but will also preserve the full mid-level amount for veteran players. We made it easier for these teams to make trades, expanding the trade exception, and for the first time allowing teams to make trades into the exceptions. This allows players to get to teams that will re-sign them using the bird and early bird exceptions, both of which remain untouched in this agreement.
That's for teams that don't hit the salary cap?
It says for teams over the salary cap.
Over.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
Allegedly. Obviously, we have to finalize the terms. This is me reading this verbatim because the term sheet hasn't been sent in yet. Oh, here we go. In addition, for the first time since they were put in place in 2011, the tax brackets will grow annually at the same rate as our revenue increases, up from the current $5 million amount. This will lighten the burden on tax spending teams at the low end of the luxury tax. Basically, for the first time ever, it'll grow with the cap, which it hasn't done before, which will be nice. Like to be able to see things grow with the actual money, I think is important for our game and will make things better. But there's some stuff in it that people may or may not like, which is normal. And you can't please everybody in this world. It's impossible.
Oh, this just reminded me that I've got 12 days to do my taxes, and I have not done so yet.
Gotcha. Perfect. Well, Mikel, I appreciate you coming on the pod, brother. I know you got to get treatment. I got to go to practice. We're still in the playing game, so we got some work to do. We don't have the luxury of being able to not look at the standings. Like these games that used to not matter actually matter now for a lot of teams. And now you like when the Blazers beat Minnesota and they're a 19.5-point underdog, you're like, wow, that was a really good win. So that's where we're at with society. But I appreciate you coming on. Let me know how many restaurants you've hit up on that list I sent you over to in New York.
Bro, I've been when the season's over, I got you. I've really been just lacking and been inside and been happy.
That's what you're supposed to do. You keep getting 27 a night on 50-40-90. You don't have to go out to eat at all.
Well, I appreciate you, fam.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, brother.
All right, you too.
Thanks. All right, y'all.